All right, guys, so I think I started to give Shir Kali, this I think is my fifth year. The first 4 years, I tried very hard to not ever review a topic, to do just new topics all the time. But I broke it down a little this year, and occasionally do an old topic. But at least I'll be careful not to do a topic from last year, since we know it from Shunabet has to deal with Dublin. I think I last gave this 2 years ago. So the only person who can complain in the room is John Seidel. Okay? He's in his own world anyway, so it's okay. Okay, so let's look at a very intriguing topic here about what happens when there's a mystery regarding Shabbat. Okay, so let's see what we have here. Amar Rav Huna, I'm halach b'derech o b'midbar. V'ein yodei matai Shabbat. Could be you get lost, like your boat capsizes, or you're just wandering the desert, and you lose track of all time. So now you're trying to figure out, how do I keep Shabbat? I have no idea what day of the week it is. Okay, so the Gemara makes two suggestions. So first we say, Moneh shish yamim u'shabeh yom echad. Count 6 days and then keep Shabbos. Chir b'rav amar mishami yom echad u'moneh shisha. You start with Shabbos and go with 6 days. What are the two models here? Why would say one and why would say the other? But my kamifugi. So what's the point of contention? Mar seva kabriyato shalom. So it's pretty easy to explain the six and one. What would be the logic of 6 days of work and then Shabbos? You're modeling the creation story. Right, so you work for 6 days, and the seventh day, if you realize, is Shabbat. Okay, what about the other theory? Why would I go with the one and six? Umar sabar kadam rishon. What's the idea, guys? Why Adam rishon? Well, think of it. Adam rishon is created on the sixth day, which means from the human perspective, Shabbos is the first day. Right, so you start with Shabbos, then go on to 6 days of work. Okay, so either we model the creation story in the abstract, the six and one model, or we model the experiential experience of Adam Rishon, and it's one and six. Okay, great. Now let's get to that's in terms of a general picking a day for Shabbat. What about the halachic nitty gritty? Amar Rava, b'chol yom v'yom oselo k'day parnasato bar mehu yuma. Okay, what's oselo k'day parnasato? Yeah, you have to do malacha, right? Supporting yourself, getting food is going to require malacha. You might have to cook a meal or trap an animal or pluck fruit off the tree. Those are all involved in malachot. So what's the suggestion? Every day do just enough malacha for your survival. Right, you need a meal. So go pluck the requisite amount of fruit and you're good to go for the day. Okay, why won't you pluck more than the requisite amount? Yeah, because every day is a suffek Shabbos, right? Even though you arbitrarily picked a day to be Shabbos, you really have no mathematical reason to think that Shabbos any more than the other day. So therefore, every day do enough to survive, except for that day. So now then we ask an obvious question. V'hu yom alemut? Wait, but that day, what does it mean? That means 1/7 of my time on this desert island. I'm starving. That could be dangerous. Right? The person could die not eating on that day. So is that what we suggest? So the Gemara says, no, the oven may at the most day parnasot. Maybe on whatever day you arbitrarily pick as Friday, you do twice as much work, and then you have food for 2 days, almost like the month. Okay, but now that sounds great, except for b'dimul mi'at mol Shabbat abe, right? Don't forget, the day I pick Shabbat is purely arbitrary. The day that's my Friday could just as easily be Shabbat as Shabbat. So why would I be justified on Friday in doing more malacha? So the Gemara says, backs down, el kol yom b'yom oselo parnasato afilu yuma. What emerges? So from a malacha perspective, even the day I picked an arbitrary day to be Shabbat, it ends up not being any different. What do I do all 7 days of my existence on the desert island? Enough malacha in order to have food for that day. That is the norm. That's what I do. Okay, we're good so far? So there, what's the obvious question at that point? So what makes the seventh day Shabbat? So, bahu yuma b'may minkar lay. What's the root of minkar? That nikar, what makes it recognizable? What makes it identifiable? Okay, b'kiddusha v'avdavda. It's a very fascinating Gemara. According to this Gemara, on my desert island sojourn over there, what makes it Shabbos? Just two simple things. I start the day with Kiddush, and I end it with Havdah. So I think it's also fascinating, because like a Jew's connection to Shabbat, we want Shabbos to be part of your life experience. And even if, due to circumstances, it won't be expressed in the world of Malacha, here I'm going to do enough malacha every day to survive. It's not going to be a day I don't do malacha. Nonetheless, we want you to still have a feel of Shabbos. even if it's just manifest in Kiddush and Havdalah, there'll be a sense that Shabbos is part of your life experience. Yes, Jordan Lamar.
This is kind of like a technical question about just the style of the Gemara. On the first part where each of them explain their views on why you should do something on that day, why is there not an instance where they say why the other reason does not work?
Oh, that's interesting. It is a good question. I'm not sure I have an answer. It's true that's a classic Talmudic methodology, but I wouldn't say they always do so. So that it would be great if you could work out a pattern, but that's like a lifetime. It'll give you a lifetime achievement award because it will take a lifetime. Okay, but that's a great question. Ever catch what Jordan just said? It's a very good question. Often when the Gemara says, here's the reason for A, here's the reason for B, it will then ask each authority, what's your objection to the other fellow's reason? Okay, and here, but the Gemara does not play it out that way. Joe, what do you think? You're right. I think sometimes even in Svari you get it. But maybe Yaj is on the go. Maybe Joe's on something. So you guys go to MTA, you get a little more Gemara in your background there. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, JJ.
Is there an application just to the dateline problem?
The dateline problem. Let's leave a question of the international dateline out of it. Okay? Where's Shirley from there? Okay. Only some of you got the reference. Okay, here we go. Okay, so let's go to, and let's ask a few more questions, though. Okay, so we discussed so far what's happening in terms of Malacha and what's happening in terms of Kitchen Havdalah. But one interesting thing about Shabbat is there are other elements to Shabbat also. There are other elements that are not a manifestation of Malacha, nor are they a manifestation of Kitchen Havdalah, so they deserve their own conversation. For example, it's not even true that the 39 Malachot exhaust all the forbidden things to do on Shabbat. So we have heard this idea that we don't walk out of the Tchum on Shabbat. Now again, if you live in a very big city, and if you live in the middle of Manhattan, it's kind of hard to walk out of the Tchum on Shabbat. It takes a lot of effort. Okay, but if you live in a small town, let's say you live in Virginia, right? So maybe it doesn't take so long to walk out of the Tchum, right? So you'll have this idea that, there is a restriction on what you could walk. That's not a malacha. Okay, got that? The prohibition of Tchum is separate from the prohibition of Malachot. One second, Simon. So I could ask, wait, how do these 7 days play out in terms of the Isser of Tchum? Okay, or, we'll get to it even later, it could be another fascinating thing. What about a halakha like the fact that we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos? Right? How does that play out in these 7 days? I think there's a lot of interesting test cases beyond the world of Isser Malacha. Simon.
This is maybe, can I ask a question about the New York Bears? I thought
Tchum
and
then
Erev, that's how I got there.
No. Okay.
That's why I asked.
You understand why it's not the same question, right?
Yeah. No.
Okay, meaning you were consciously asking a tangential question.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Way to go, son. Okay. Okay. All right, so let's take a look at the Tchum question first. Okay, so let's go to Tosfos. Tosfos raised this right away. Osek de Panasato, says Tosfos. What do you assume? And don't forget, all 7 days are suffix Shabbos, right? Not just the day I picked the Shabbos. What do we say after all? On all those days, only do enough malacha to survive. Nonetheless, what does Tosu posit? What would be the status of Isser Tchum? We wouldn't worry about it. Walk as much as you want. Wait. Rak b'yom shemeshamer, except for the day I'm keeping Shabbos. So now we seem to have another distinction according to Tosfos. 6 days, I walk as much as I want. On the seventh day, I'm restricted to within the Tchum, which I guess in the desert island wouldn't be very much. Now why? There's something else interesting lurking here. Lo yagia lolam li yishuv. What does Tosfos want to argue? You'll never get back to civilization. So I think something interesting that emerges here is that pikuach nefesh here is not only valuing like my immediate survival. There's almost like this long-term pikuach nefesh perspective. What do you have from a long-term pikuach nefesh? From a short-term pikuach nefesh perspective, do malachas, you could provide lunch and dinner. But what do you have from a long-term pikuach nefesh perspective? We have to get home. If you're constantly restricted in how much you can walk, you'll never get back to civilization. So it says Tosfos, so how do we deal with that? Well, 6 out of the 7 days, we let you walk as much as you want. But on the seventh day, that's when you're restricted. One second, guys. So now there's an obvious question. I'm just going to finish the Tosfos. The Hatakamra B'mai Minkar. What's bothering Tosfos now? The Gemara said, what distinguishes Shabbos? The only thing it could come up with was Kiddush and Havdalah. But if Tosfos is right, there's another distinction, namely, Tchumen. 6 days a week, you walk as much as you want. On the seventh day, you're restricted. So says Tosros, Deins a hecker Shabbat b'mashi yoshev ein holech. This is very interesting, the two answers. What's Tosos' first approach here, guys? What makes a hecker a hecker? You have to do something. Obviously, active things are much more recognizable than passive things, than not doing something. So if I simply don't walk out of the tchum, there isn't the same sense of, oh, that it's a Shabbos endeavor. But to say Kiddush, that clarifies the Shabbat. So again, it'll take on 1 second, guys. Let's get the two approaches down. First approach of Tosfot, indeed there is a distinction. I walk out of tchum 6 days a week. Don't walk out of tchum on Shabbat. Why does the Gemara not acknowledge that? Because that's not recognizable. It's not active. Second approach in Tosfot. Inami afilu b'yom shemeshamer holy k'moshe rotze. What's the second approach of Tosfot? Denies the first distinction. Namely, how many days can I walk out of tchum? 7 days. Every day. Just like on all the days I can do malacha, on all the days I can walk out of tchum. Just two quick points, guys. Now we would no longer ask, why does the Gemara not bring that up? The reason why the Gemara doesn't bring it up is because it's not true. It's not a distinction between Shabbat and the other 6 days. Secondly, I think, again, you get to what I call this long-term pikuach nefesh. Again, short-term, I can make my meals. Long-term, I have to get myself back to civilization. Yoni.
I think you might have been a Shianist, but if you have, like, 5 pieces of meat and you don't know which one's kosher or not,
yes,
you just eat all of them. So why can't you apply this here and just, like, not keep any
data? Okay, so Yoni's doing something very clever. Let me just make 2 points, though. First of all, Yoni is quoting the Sheet of the Rush, which is a fascinating Sheeta. It is a maverick position, the Rush. Most people do not think you can eat all the pieces of meat.
I
know you love that Rush, but most people do not agree with it. But Yoni's doing something very interesting also. Maybe we should take a rule book, which we know there's a rule book about how we deal with cases of rove. There's a rule book that gives of suffix. Maybe we should, no one yet has, the Gemara has not yet plugged that in. Well, if we plug in rove, we plug in suffix. Now, Yoni's case is particularly interesting because if you really want to plug in rove, what might you say? Every day in the week, I have a rove. That's not Shabbat. So that's an interesting question. How the laws of rove and suffix plug in here? We'll get to it a little bit later, Yoni. Okay, Jordan.
How is Tosfot able to go first, he said keep 6 days.
And no, because don't forget, the Gemara didn't come to a clear stand, so we could speculate about it. But the Gemara does not raise the Tchumen question. So one could say that's because you could figure out different reasons why the Gemara didn't raise the Tchumen question, but at that point it's open to speculate. Okay, Dan Shanis.
If a person's in a survival situation, any day frame is life and death. You can suddenly run into
okay.
crisis, lose all his food, lose all his
okay, so that's kind of like the second sheet of Tosfot, no?
So why would we have any malachas on the actual day that it's Shabbos? Why can't
you
travel?
Because this. Well, you're basically arguing for the second position of Tosfot.
Yeah.
Okay. It's okay, Dan. You could identify with the second position of Tosfot. Okay. Yeah.
Kind of a little bit of the opposite of what you said. Like, sure, you'd be getting home faster by traveling on the seventh day. But then again, in this hypothetical situation, we are saying that he seems like he had food to eat or food to hunt to eat.
Okay.
So therefore, yes, you get home faster, but he doesn't seem like he's about to die if he has.
Okay, look, so Avi, I think you're hitting on the key point here, which it's really interesting, Sugi, in the sense that we pretty much know how to deal with immediate pikuach nefesh in halacha. How do you deal with the kind of long-term pikuach nefesh strategies is a much more interesting question. So an example where this comes up, guys, we'll discuss it more some other time. Okay, there's a very interesting tshuva about autopsies, right, where the Noda B'Yuda was asked, because they, you know, in halacha, you're not supposed to cut up a dead body. So he was asked about doing an autopsy on a sick person so you could find out about that illness and help somebody. But what about finding out the illness is kind of very abstract and long-term. Like, there's no sick person with that illness right now who this information will help, but maybe somewhere down the road, it will be helpful. So I'm not getting to it right now. You can look it up. It's a famous truth of the Noda B'Yuda, but it touches on a similar circumstance. There's no, like, immediate pikuach nefesh, but there's some kind of long-term life-saving goal. Like, how does halacha address that? Sam?
Tosfot saying that the only distinction would be positive, and why would we even ask the question from Malacha? Because Malacha is only a negative act. As if, like, it seems to imply that people not doing negative stuff is also a distinction from Malacha.
No, that's a clever point. You're saying, it's as if the Gemara is saying, once you've told me that there's never just a Malacha, so then where is Shabbos manifest?
Exactly. So that would then you would have to say that Shabbos is manifest in negative prohibition.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I guess I'd say one thing, unless you say, sounds very clever, unless you say it's not really, yeah, Shir Kol Yerushalayim. That's it. Okay. He only wakes up for Shir Kol Yerushalayim. Okay, so Sam, unless you say maybe I overdid it, it's not really active passive. Maybe a sweeping prohibition like Isser Malacha is recognizable. But the mere limited detail that I don't walk outside the tchum, that's not so recognizable. Because in fact, even if you look at the, I'm glad Sam pushed me in this, because what do you think? If you look at the Tosfot. Ein zeheker Shabbat b'mashe yoshev ve'ein holeich. Is the main point the passivity, or is the main point just that that specific detail is not so recognizable? Maybe I just decided to have a restful day. Maybe I just needed to not walk many miles today. Right? And therefore, so maybe it's more like the limited impact of tchum that makes it not recognizable. Sam, what do you think? Possible?
Possible.
Okay. All right. We'll go for that. Yeah, JJ.
This question. If somebody who's keeping, like, let's say they choose a day as Monday, like they chose wrong, they keep Monday as Shabbos, meets another wanderer who chose, like, Wednesday.
Oh, that's a cute question. You're saying if different people have different days, no one can keep Shabbos together. Well, it's really okay, because it just means that they'll make Kiddush and Abdullah on different days. Like, it's not the end of the world.
Can they have the other guy?
You know, like, what day to, like, eat herrig and sing Askina Sudasa? Like, what's the question?
Can I ask my, can I ask the other guy to do, like, my picking move?
No! Why is that? It was a great question to the last moment. Why is that a lousy question? Because as far as all three of them are concerned, every day is the same as far as Isser Malacha is concerned. What do all three of them do every day of the week? Enough Malacha to survive.
I thought the case was weird enough to generate a question.
No, it was great. You just stopped in the middle there. Yeah. Zach.
Practically, how does Tchum apply to the situation? Because if you're in a stranded...
I understand. It's a good question. I don't need to address it right now. How we need to figure out what city limits are on the desert island or in the desert. It's a good question. Yeah.
So how does this whole thing about Shabbos, how does it interact with other holidays
it's a good question. It's a good question. I'm going to duck it for now, right? It's interesting when I raise it for Shabbos. You can ask me about various chagim. Like, would I make some... Let's say it's really long term. Would I have some artificial Yom Kippur day in my calendar? That's a very good question. Yeah, Joe. Okay. You're right. Like saying the assumption of Tosa was you need to move to be saved. You could have a converse scenario where you actually just stay stable. Yeah, I agree. The Chalakha would play it differently. I totally agree. Yeah.
So, for say the case for Joseph stranded on an island. And then you wouldn't actually be able to go out towards someone. You'd have to just wait until someone...
You know, I'm starting to wonder if I've been making a mistake for years because I naturally go with the desert island case. How did the Gemara phrase the case? Yeah, maybe desert's a better way. Maybe that's more specific what the Gemara is thinking of. You're lost in the desert. So then, obviously, the Tosas pick up on that. The key move would probably not be, I'll wait in the desert till I'm rescued. Right? The key move is to get back to civilization.
Second thing, on JJ's question, not his question, the point that he brought up before, wouldn't it then be problematic, because the whole point is that we're dealing with like suffix here and row, but once you have two people that have conflicting Shabbos, then you can't say that, oh, well, now like mine is definitely Shabbos, because he says that that one's definitely Shabbos. Or like, there's something.
No, but again, I think experientially, it would not be much of an issue, because as far as Malacha is concerned, they're all the same every day.
Right, but not...
The only thing is, okay, so one guy says, Kiddush Abdul today, and he says it 2 days from now.
Isn't that Baltimore sin for one of them if it's together?
Why?
Because once...
Each one is doing it once every 7 days.
Right, but I'm saying, Shabbos isn't something that we're supposed to create for ourselves, something that's supposed to be created in itself.
All right, this is kind of an unusual scenario. What do you want the guy to do?
But what I'm saying is that we're trying to deal with the suffix situation here, and therefore we'll have to be... a little bit of gula, but if there's another person who's saying, oh, your day isn't actually Shabbos, then are you technically now getting into a situation where it's more problematic for like...
Look, it's kind of, you can make some bad jokes about this. Like, they're going to have like a religious fight, who's got the real Shabbos day, right? But I think they can find a way to live with it.
Let's say seven people show up together and they all have a different day for what Shabbos, like one of them is right.
Okay, so we don't know who that one guy is.
But I'm saying at a certain, like six of them should...
All right, that's it, guys. Okay, here's what we should do. Someone in this room should one day write a halachic short story about this happening to seven people who all end up with a different day of Shabbos, and you can write how it plays out in their desert. It would be great. I'm not sure it's great for like a halachic discussion, but it would be a good short story. Yeah, Jonas Sobel.
Are they getting the mitzvah of Shabbos and they keep that day Shabbat? Or is it just like...
I don't think so. In fact, I should have said, wait, guys, look at Rashi. Very good, Jonas Sobel. Look at Rashi, guys. Bikdusha v'avdalta. Rashi is very clear about this. 1 second, here. Okay. What does Rashi say? Lizzie Karon ba'alma. What's Rashi getting here, guys? Don't think this is an authentic Fehundish Rashi. We have no idea. What is it? It's a way to keep it in memory. She yellow sham yom chaluk mishar yamim. V'lo tishtakach shabat mimenu. Clearly, how does Rashi view this? It is an educational pedagogic move. Shabbat should be part of your Jewish experience. Did you actually fulfill the mitzvah of Shabbat? Probably not. But, okay, you do the best you can. Okay, I'm sorry. Tani.
So what if you can reconcile and have both the short-term and long-term Ruach Nefesh?
Yeah.
That's where, let's say we say Shabbos is Tuesday. So then every day we're going to do minimal halacha, including Tuesday. Mm-hmm. What if we change that and say, Monday you'll do double what you should
do? The Gemara raised that point, right? Remember that?
So I'm saying, what's the...
No, but why does that not work, guys? Say Monday do double? Yeah, because there's just as much chance that Monday Shabbos the Tuesday is.
But if I'm saying, then you can make the argument that because you're in some sort of desert that you don't know what's going on, maybe there might be no food for you the next day to go collect. Normally, as if it was just a normal Tuesday, that you still want to have...
Look, okay, you're raising a different question, which I'm not going to raise, which is a reasonable question. Like, the Gemara seems to think of the Malacha as being very, like, hand-to-mouth, as it were. Like, you pick a bunch of fruits, and then you have food for the day. There seems to be no sense of, oh, I'll do Malacha today, and then I have food for the next 3 weeks. Like, imagine like you trap an animal and shecht it. So if you trap an animal and shecht it, presumably that doesn't provide, you know, 1 day of sustenance. I agree. It's an interesting question. I'm not 100% sure how to address it. The Gemara's focus seems to be more hand to mouth, right? I go, you know, pick fruit, pick berries, and now I have food for the day. Yeah, Aaron. Yeah. I guess because Zeichel Shabbos is really count. Why is that shocking? What about Ashkenazim who are willing to make brachot on things they're not chayavin? Okay. What about Sveika Dioma on the second day of Yom Tov? You make a lot of brachot, right? Yeah.
I think I've come up with a solution.
Great. All right, here we go.
Now,
hey, you guys also realize Avi Moser is making a big move in yeshiva this month. He's starting to flip out. Okay, yeah, go ahead, Avi.
What if you just do all your hunting at night? Because because Shabbos, let's say, ends at 9.
No, but the next day could just leave me Shabbos. It doesn't help. Yeah. The night, right? Don't worry. Shabbos starts tonight also, just like it ends at night. Okay, yeah, yeah. Jordan Lamar.
Does this Gemara give a precedent, assuming that you're trapped on wherever you are, for a very long period of time to start counting in regards to other holidays?
Well, Ari was right, I said before. We have not addressed that. How other Chagim would play in. Yeah. You worry about the Sefer Shabbos now? I should be fair. It's an interesting question. Would you have the Sefer Shabbos here? Okay, let's leave it be for now. Okay, let's go to Ramban. Okay, I'll take more comments in a few minutes. Let's get a little more done here. Now, what do we have here? We said the idea of being Mekel on Tchumen. What was the Tosfos arguing to be Mekel on Tchumen? What was Tosfos' reason to be Mekel on Tchumen? The long term Bikur HaMevesh. You have to get back to civilization. Okay, however, the Ramban is a different argument. But my Mekel Bikdush of Dalta. Pirshu Rabbeinu Atzarfatim. The Tosfos, the French rabbis. Av Mutalei Chutz L'Tchoma Filu Boto Yom Shumakadesh. Again, how often can you walk outside the Tchum? Every day. Why? But for a different reason here, Lefisha Tchumen Mitivrayem, Vachoshu Mitivrayem Logosru. What's his first approach? It's the Rabbanon. It's not as serious as Malacha. Maybe that's why we're leaning to about Tchum. Secondly, Afil Mandam Tchumen Deraita, given to Isser Aseu, Ve'enu Isser Skila Loch Niru. So that's an important point, guys. Even if Tchumen is viewed as a Deraita and it's an Isser, what is it not part of? It is not part of Lotase Malacha. It doesn't have all the chumrot, right? Chilul Shabbos is a big deal in Malacha. But now you have this fascinating thing that follows this away for other categories, guys. How do we relate to Isurei Shabbos that are usher, but don't have the full weight of Malacha? Tchumen might be an example of that. So says the Ramban, for various halachic reasons, Tchumen's more lenient. It might be rabbinic things are more lenient. It might be Deraita, but not a Deraita that's part of the Malacha Shabbat Chiyuv Skila framework. Okay, so we have different, again, we have Tosfot saying, we have long-term Pikuach Nefesh, and with Ramban adding that Tchumen is not as halachically serious as Malacha. Yeah. That someone asked that before, but I've ignored it for now. Okay, let us go to the Ritva. Okay, let's go back to Kiddush and Avdalah. This is good for you who did Hilchot Shabbat here. B'Kiddush of Avdalah. Now, the Ritva assumes that you probably are having a hard time getting your fancy wine at the local liquor store there in the desert. So, and you're probably not growing grapes either and making your own wine. So, B'Kiddush of Avdalah, Pirish, B'Pat. So what does he assume? What are you making Kiddush on?
Bread.
And what are you making Havdalah on?
Bread.
Okay, what's the problem? Those you know Yochel Shabbat? You can't make Havdalah on bread. Okay, in Kiddush, you can make Kiddush on bread, because bread is connected to the meal, and Kiddush is connected to the meal. But there is no idea of Havdalah on bread. So he says, V'afel pishen mavdil nalapat, v'konam akam hani mili b'yishuv, avol b'midbar, sheyef shar b'yayin, mavdil b'pat. So let me make a point here, because I think this is quite interesting and not obvious at all. What does the Ritva basically say? Well, if I have no alternative, I do it on bread. Okay, guys, think it's a good argument or not such a good argument? Yeah, because what often happens if I have no alternative? What? Yom Kippur! Right, let's say I have no bread. Would you say, oh, so make Havdalah on your novel of Camus the Stranger? No, it has to be relevant, right? It has to be something relevant for you to make. You can't just change the rule book because there's no alternative. Right, so if bread really doesn't work for Havdalah, so bread doesn't work for Havdalah. So what happened that all of a sudden, oh, there's no alternative, you could do it. So this Ritva needs a bit of work, like why all of a sudden we break the rules because there's no alternative. Okay, but then he says something even more fascinating. V'im ein lo pat, mekadesh umavdil b'tfila, k'mo sh'anu osim yom ha'kippur. So this I always find interesting, because my whole life I thought, how does it work? We make Kiddush on Shabbos, we make Kiddush on the Chagim, we don't make Kiddush on Yom Kippur. We'd like to, but because we can't drink wine, we don't make Kiddush on Yom Kippur. It could be that was a mistaken conception. What's the correct way to say it? We make Kiddush on Yom Kippur. When? When we say the Ma'ar of Tefillah and talk about Yom Kippur. Some of you may have heard the idea that maybe even every Shabbos, I really fulfill the basic mitzvah of Kiddush just by davening Friday night, even before I go to the cup of wine. So really, maybe the right way to say it is, there are different modes of Kiddush. There's Kiddush ala kos, which I do Shabbat and Chagim. Yom Kippur, I fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush by saying Shmona Esrei. So if that's true, you could get out of the problem here. Well, how do I do the Kiddush Navdal in theory? Maybe not through Pad, but through Tefillah. Okay, now I'll take comments. Yeah, David.
So on that point, if someone is going to be eating and drinking on Yom Kippur, is it like a special Kiddush?
Okay. It's a good question, but I'm ducking it for now. Okay, yeah, who else? We're good? Yeah, Yoni.
So the question comes with my limited knowledge of the essence of Shabbos, but let's say you are in this community. Let's say you're with a woman in this desert island, and you like start procreating, you have like a society that starts, then what if every seventh day you like become Shabbos, and then that would eventually, because it's the seventh day of your count, would be Shabbos, and the count of Shabbos. Or is there an entire like Shabbos have to be this end? Or is it just the seventh day of your week?
Wait, what? How did producing more children change?
Because it's a society, and then it's not, then everyone's keeping your calendar. And then it is the seventh day of everyone's week.
Okay, but you have a very funny society in which the whole society does just enough milk each day to have lunch.
No, I'm saying once you this whole society. Well,
why you're assuming that if it's more than one person, then we would change the rules? Maybe we just keep the same rules going. Okay, but Yoni, that could be in your short story. Like, what happens with not just 7 people, it's a whole society of people like that? Okay.
What if that's our society?
What?
What if that's our society?
Okay, you can do alternate universes, it's great. You can go with science fiction, it'd be really fun. Okay. Yeah, Michael.
So if you're in the middle of your Shabbos and then you stumble upon the town and it turns out it's actually Wednesday, do you have to finish back your Shabbos or do you just start doing Malacha?
I would say you could do Malacha immediately.
You don't need to stop?
Nope. Because again, you were just keeping Shabbos misafik. Now that the suffix's been resolved, so you know this, you don't have to do anything. Zach?
If every day is Safek Shabbos, why should you change your behavior on a specific day?
No, that's exactly what Rashi said. What was the point, guys? You want to have a sense of Shabbos, and you can't create a sense. Oh, you know, you can give a whole Muslim word based on this second, everything until now. Let's say somebody says, I don't need a special day of Shabbos because every day is Shabbos for me. Okay, what if it seems to emerge from this Gemara? It doesn't work that way. If every day Shabbos, no day Shabbos. Right? See, I didn't even realize the machshav implications of this sugya. Okay? Yeah.
More with regards to the leader of the halachic pigs about the filling and like chulim, shouldn't you treat all like the halachic applications the same way? Yeah. I'm saying, why does it matter for filling whether you want to create a sense of Shabbos?
We'll see in a second.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Yeah, Joe?
Yeah. If you're going to say it's because the essence of Shabbos is not actually being a Shabbos, you say the one has the essence of Shabbos and say, oh, you're fucking Shabbos. You're fucking Shabbos, you're listening.
Well, you're not only putting them in Shabbos, right? I mean, you're kind of hedging your bets because you're doing just enough malacha to survive, right? Okay? We're good? Okay, yeah, Jordan.
For Rav Gala, would it be like better to like have tefillah instead of bread?
So the truth is, I'm wondering about one thing. This is great, guys, because I've given this year before, but you always get new angles. One second. Yeah, he did say Mekadesh Umavio. He does say that. So you know what, Jordan? You're right. The question I asked on the Ritva is even stronger now. I asked on the Ritva why, if pot doesn't work for Havdalah, so in an emergency situation, the answer should be, okay, you can't do Havdalah, it's not your fault. Why would the solution suddenly be, pot suddenly works? But Jordan, it's like even a stronger question. What does the Ritva go on to say? If you don't have pot, you can do it in tefillah. So he seems comfortable with tefillah being some sort of Kiddush and Havdalah, right? So you're right, it's not as good, but it's even stronger. Like, why does he feel this urgency to allow pot to work? It's a good question, Jordan. Okay, exciting, guys. We have new voices in Shirklo these days. Okay, Jordan Cena, very good. Okay, let us go to source 6. Okay, now, this is important to realize when you read Mishneh Berurah that the Chafetz Chaim kind of divide into different commentaries. He almost is both Rashi and Tosfot. Right, so obviously the Mishneh Berurah is a running commentary. It tends not to get into great depth. But if you're interested in a more analytic, conceptual approach, often in the Bir Halacha, he has a more extensive conversation, more like a Tosos-like conversation. So let's look at this Bir Halacha, and it's a very beautiful Bir Halacha. Okay, we'll skip the first one, go to the second one. Okay, so that's on the second page. Okay, let's bring up the tefillin question. Afilu b'yom shemekadesh bo. Uvlid inyan tefillin, nir lani yodati, d'chayev laniach bo. Darova yimimecho, so notice what he says. You know, you guys said maybe we should bring in the whole rove construct. For whatever reason, he wants to bring in for tefillin. He says, in any given day, what should I say? Well, I've got a 6 out of 7 chance that it is chol, and therefore, 6 out of 7 is pretty good odds. What should I do? Put on tefillin? Okay, let's keep going. Umasha is the kiddush rak, the second bound is Rashi. Umasha asa b'lach, chol, efshim shim dasur, rabban ki kavua. Okay, excellent. So at this point, he says, what would I do in terms of tefillin? I would put it on every day because of the rov. Now, I glossed over a line. For those of you who got the reference, he tries to explain why the rov doesn't help you with malacha. Okay, I'm not getting into it right now, but you can take a look. Okay, next. Now he has another story. He's a great story that comes up. What? We'll see in a second. Od yisvar l'chaivo, delo p'tur d'shavad u'mpnei sheim atzman ot. Vimkein zesh osvo malach l'panoso ein bo heker. Ah, now he's very clever. Till now he's been saying, why do I wear tefillin on this in this desert? Because I rely on the majority, right? Rove, statistical probability. But now he's got a more inherent svar. Who could tell me what his more inherent svar is? He said, I don't need to rely on rove. I have a more fundamental reason I should be wearing tefillin. Jordan, you got it? Okay, why? Let's think for a second, guys. You might have to do one piece of it. Zach, what do you say?
Because you're supposed to have two loss at all times. You're going to have Shabbos being up for you. Then you have to substitute out
tefillin. Okay, and in this case?
In this case, you don't know what Shabbos is.
Very good. Excellent. Okay, what's the drasha that explains why we don't wear tefillin on Shabbat? This is an idea that tefillin is referred to as an oat, right? Ukshartem la'ot al yadecha. And other things that are called an oat, such as Shabbat, render the need for tefillin obsolete. So if you already got an oat, you don't need the tefillin oat. That's the why you're exempt from tefillin on Shabbat. In fact, that creates a famous machloket. Some may know there's a famous machloket. Should you wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed? Now you can understand. What would be a good rationale for such a machloket? Does Chol HaMoed qualify as an oath? It's kind of this intermediate day. I got some of the halachot, not all the halachot. So do you need an Issa Malacha and full-fledged force to be an oath? Okay, so at that point, we can understand what's going on. But now, says the Bi'ur Halacha, very clever svara. What's the claim? If you're keeping Shabbos in Queens, right, so you're great. You have an oath and you don't need tefillin. But what's true about this guy? He doesn't really have a good Shabbos, right, because every day he's doing the same thing, right? And he's even doing Malacha every day. So maybe he doesn't have the oath of Shabbat. Since he doesn't have the oath of Shabbat, he should be wearing tefillin, not just based on Rove, but based on the Shabbos exemption doesn't apply to him. Yeah, Aaron.
So don't say that, like,
you're
allowed to wear tefillin.
Okay, yeah. So what do you have to lose? Yeah. Okay, so the truth is, there's a, lurking here might be a different issue, which is as follows. Okay, we'll bring in a little Kabbalah for a second. Okay, some of you may know, I don't know exactly why, but the Kabbalists were very adamant that wearing tefillin on Shabbat is a terrible thing. Okay, meaning Amper just isn't clever. According to the drasha I just said, what should the din be? Not that it's usher to wear tefillin on Shabbat, it's simply that you don't need to, right? The mitzvah falls away because you don't need that oath because you have the Shabbat or Pesach as the oath. Okay, but at that point, again, you could wear tefillin, it's just not a chiyuv. Okay, but the Kabbalists moved it to something, you know, horrendous religiously to do. Okay, but this has a lot of implications, by the way. For example, are tefillin mukta on Shabbat? How should it play out? Well, if I go with a non-Kabbalistic approach, what should I say? No, they're not mukta. I mean, I could put them on if I want to do. I don't know why I'd want to, but maybe I just like wearing tefillin, right? Maybe I'm, you know, David Lucius, like wearing tefillin a little bit at 9:30 in the morning. Okay, so that was because he missed Shabbos, guys, because he kept them on one day this week. Okay, so didn't want you to get maligned on why you're Torah for eternity. Okay, so so now it wouldn't be mukta. But if it's asar, there's no usage, so tefillin should be mukta. Okay, by the way, you'll even notice one other thing, guys. I've often pointed this out. Which groups in our community are most influenced by Kabbalistic ideas?
Sephardim
and Hasidim. Okay, Sephardim and Hasidim. Guess which two groups do not wear tefillin in Chol HaMoed? Sephardim and Hasidim. Okay, it is not an accident. Okay, not an accident, that's what occurred. Okay, yes. Yeah. Okay, so I didn't say it's a one-to-one correspondence. Why does some Ashkenazim? Well, don't forget, there was already a machloket about Chol HaMoed before the Kabbalists come into play. Right? Because I could say, don't mean the Ashkenazim who don't wear tefillin Chol HaMoed, they don't necessarily say it's usher. They just say Chol HaMoed classifies as an oath. If Chol HaMoed classifies as an oath, there's no need for wearing tefillin. Okay? Yeah, David.
So if we're trying to find a distinction between this seventh day and the rest of the Sunday Shabbos days, then wouldn't not wearing tefillin be a good indicator that, oh, I'm keeping this as Shabbos, as the Shabbos day?
Look, I think the Bi'ur Halacha is assuming that I wear tefillin on my Shabbos day also, that the same robe argument applies or the same lack of oath argument applies.
I think this is a more fundamental situation. I think this is a more fundamental thing that... right now, all of the 7 days are suffering, and we're choosing one to be our Shabbos of the week. And yes, I understand that, okay, maybe you could wear them, but because we're trying to make the distinction here,
okay,
it might be something to... But it's the one mitzvah asay that we... It's like one of the few mitzvah asays that we don't do specifically on Shabbos, rather than a passive lotah say that, oh, like it could be like the rest of them.
Okay, interesting. I'll think about it. By the way, he asked about a parallel case, which was quite interesting. What about a case where someone's not in a desert island, but they had to be Machal Shabbos because some Pikuach Nefesh scenario came up? Would you then say, what could you argue if you really take this argument seriously? Once you did Malacha? Yeah, it's kind of, no one says that, but he does raise the question. Like an example, like one Friday night in Lo Shmo, when our oldest son was 8, he fell on his head, and the doctor said he might have a concussion. So the doctor told me, you should go to the hospital. So I put Zachary in the car. We drove to the hospital on Shabbos, but it's great. There's no traffic. It's really great. Okay, so we got there quickly. In the middle of Friday night, they told me, okay, you could go now, which is great. Where am I going to go? So we ended up walking to a cousin in Katamon. But what I wanted to say is, if you take this far very seriously, what could you argue? Once I'd driven Friday night, the next morning, I should put on tefillin, which no one ever said. So you have to figure out how strongly you really take this oat argument of the Bi'ur Halacha. Yeah.
Make the argument that when the Gemara says
Look, it we have to figure out first, like, why we don't just say, like, Safik Lekulo altogether.
Yeah.
Right? You want to say it's a Safik Deraita to issue?
So I was thinking, okay. You mentioned, like, the Hefzik Agus, like, when it comes to Shirzeh Lamin Yisrael.
Yeah.
Because, well, like, the Metzius is still the one day of
Shabbat. I hear what you're saying. It's clever. It's a clever point. You're saying it's more than just Safik Deraita to Lechum and Safik Deraita Lekulo. It's like whether the Shabbat Yisrael is, like, inherent in the cosmos or not. Okay, it's very clever. Okay, I'll take more comments in 1 second. Let's get to one more issue here. Okay. Let me go to source 7. Okay, the Dov of Meisharim is a man known as the Chabina Rav. Okay, I think his name is Rav Dov Ber Weidenfeld or something like that. Okay, let's see what he says here. Okay, Valvar Svei Koba, the Mavur B'Shah Shabbat Av Samach Ted, V'chein Paschal B'Shonar, Chesim Shem Dal Mem, Halech B'Mibar, D'Mekadi, Shum Shvi, B'Kiddush Vadol. Our case, in theory, right, the guy is trapped in the desert and doesn't know what day Shabbos is. Now, we discussed the fact that he puts on tefillin. And we had two arguments why he puts on tefillin, right? V'nestabe kvot torato b'kol yom ha'shir tefillin imutal levorech aleihem mishum chas brach levatala t'dum ha'vi Shabbos. So this correspondent of the Tribune Rav said, well, maybe you could put on tefillin every day, you should put on tefillin every day, but you shouldn't make a bracha, because of brach levatala. And here's a crucial thing to realize. What if someone says, but if I don't put on the bracha, I'm not yotzei? What would you say to such a person?
Not true.
Good thing to realize, guys, as much as we like Birkat HaMitzvot, the Birkat HaMitzvah is not crucial. Anytime you do a mitzvah without the bracha, you are yotzei. If I take lulav and don't make a bracha, I'm yotzei. If I put on tefillin and don't make a bracha, I'm yotzei. So he says, I'll give up on the bracha because of a concern of bracha levatala, but why should I'll fulfill the mitzvah anyway? Okay, and then he asks the question, but he uses an interesting parallel. Okay, he says, in the world of brachot, we have the following phenomena. Okay, let's get some broader shots. You know, now we're going to bring the broader shots concepts. We have a case of suffek, and we have a case of sfeik sfeika. Okay, what's a case of suffek? So let's go to Sfiras Omer. Sfiras Omer is the easiest one. Okay, if I miss a 24-hour period, and then I say, Rabbi, I forgot to count Sfiras Omer today. What does he tell me usually? Continue counting now without a bracha. Why is that? So it's very simple. There's a machlokas, what happens if you miss a day? Right? Some people say all 49 units are separate. They're separate mitzvot. Some people say it's all or nothing. So now, I have a case of suffek, right? If I miss day 26, there's a suffek if I can fulfill the mitzvah on day 27. How do I deal with that? Well, I might as well count, because I might be getting the mitzvah. But how do I deal with the bracha? It is suffek bracha, and therefore, I don't make it. Okay, we're good? Okay, but you might have heard something different. What if you didn't count at night, but you counted the next morning? So you count in that morning without a bracha. But what are you told then? The night after that, you go back to a bracha. Why is that? So that's a halachic principle called a sfeik sfeika. It means there's two different doubts at work. What are two different doubts at work? One doubt is maybe counting in the daytime works. So if counting in the daytime works, I didn't miss a day. And what's the other suffix? Maybe even missing a day is not a problem. I can make each day a separate mitzvah. Since there are two different arguments why I can make the bracha, I make the bracha. Have we got the argument again? So if there's one suffek, we say suffek bracha lahakel. If I've got what's called a sfeik sfeika, namely there are two different doubts, and either of those arguments independently would allow me to do the activity, then I can make the bracha. Simon.
Did you once explain that sfeik sfeika is really big? If so,
again, a son coffin, the lamden of the Lower East Side. Very good. Okay, excellent.
Can you explain, because I forgot a little bit.
Oh, the Lower West Side, I guess. Okay, Simon, just a great question. What is the logic of a sfeik sfeika? So you could say one of two things. What's perhaps the easiest way to explain why a sfeik sfeika creates a leniency? Why is it okay now that there are two doubts? You might say that a sfeik sfeika is just a form of a rove. What's a rove argument halacha? I can play the percentage game, right? 6 out of 7 days are not going to be Shabbos, and therefore I should put on tefillin. Right? That is one argument. Maybe what do you have in every sfeik sfeika? Well, if you think about it mathematically, in every sfeik sfeika, 3 of the 4 eventualities mean you're okay. Okay, can I explain what that? Why? Do you guys understand? I should explain why it's 3 out of 4. So I think I should explain it. Okay, let's say I have two variables. I have variable A and variable B. Either variable alone allows me to do it. Okay, why is that true in this case? Again, what are the two variables? I might be allowed to count with a bracha because Maybe each day's own mitzvah. I also might be allowed to count with a bracha because maybe counting the morning works and I didn't miss a day. Okay, so we got variable A, variable B. Now, it's very simple, guys, right? Just do your little math chart. If I have variable A, what are the four possibilities? Either A is true, B is true, A and B are true, or neither are true. So if either A is true, B is true, or A and B are true, I can make a bracha. It's only if A and B are not true that I can't. So maybe every sveika is simply a rote. Is that what you're suggesting? Yeah. Very good time. So let's play that out if that's true, because that could be quite telling. Right? Are sveikas just roves? Are they some other argument? And they won't have the same rule book as a rove. And when you see in a second, it's got tremendous implications in halakha. Yeah?
Don't we have like a similar idea where in tefillin, we're not sure if the second bracha is you need to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So we say like baruch shem to like nullify or something.
Okay.
So why don't we just do that here? When we just say,
very good. That's a difference you're calling. Maybe I'll give it next week. Okay? That is a good question, which he's been taught his whole life what most people say, and the Mishnah Berurah says, that since we're not sure if you make one bracha or two bracha on tefillin, how do we deal with it? Sfarim make one bracha. All right, that fits the pattern, by the way. You Sfarim, you just don't like to make bracha. Okay, Sfarim make one bracha. What Ashkenazim do? Make two bracha, but after the second bracha, we say, Baruch Shem Kodem HaTefillin. So Ben has a killer question. If that's such a simple solution to Safek bracha, why don't we just use that solution every time? I mean, why is the rule called Safek bracha l'hakel? What should we do? Make the bracha and then say, Baruch Hashem, you're always good to go. So, very good question. So if you look at the Aruch HaShulchan there, the Aruch HaShulchan says that what everyone thinks is not correct. We're not doing it to deal with the Safek bracha. Okay, take a look at the other Aruch HaShulchan, you'll see it's a different solution to the Tefillin issue. Okay, we're good? Okay, great. Let's go back to, wait, Dan, what do you want to say before? Okay, that's it. I solved your problem. Okay, here we go. That's always a good teaching strategy. Like, if you push off 5 minutes, like, the student will forget the question. Okay. Okay, here we go, guys. So let's go back to the Rav of Mesharim. And he raises the Sveika question. Okay, and he says, now he makes the Simon Kaplan point. He wants to assume what's a Sveika in essence. A Sveika is just another way of saying rove. If that's true, go to after the ellipsis, about 6 lines from the end. V'hachanami hacha kim derov hayamim heim chol v'zlin bat derov. I mean, why do we allow me to put on tefillin every day or tell me to put on tefillin every day? Because I was relying on rove. Wait, what do we say in Sfirat Omer? Sveika justifies making brachot. So now there's a very simple equation. If Sveika justifies making brachot and rove is simply a form of Sveika, what would I now know? That rove also justifies making brachot. So he says, therefore, the kibbin to sveika mutar. Vaslin bat the rove, shaper mutal the barak, leka kashash brachavatala, the rove lo gara mi sveika. There is, rove is no worse. So Simon, your point is really crucial. We have a model in halakha where sveika justifies brachot. If I think sveika is just rove, so I'm good to go, right? And therefore, I am justified in making the bracha. Okay, now just to make things a little more complex, and this really requires fleshing out in a much deeper way, which we're not going to do today, but you know, a little food for thought is also good. Skip down to like the last, third to last line. He says, Ulam ha'pnei Yeshua v'chein hafla, okay, two well-known achronim, Tamu, they were astonished by this. Lehadim v'b'shas nida, derov tar b'shur yachid, v'sveik sveika, tamu b'shur yachid. What if I start to explore halacha? Again, because till now, if we go with the Simon Kaplan approach, what should we expect throughout the halakhic universe? Rove and Sveika will have similar halachot. But wait, some of you who learned Sota might know this, right? Let's say I've got a suffix about Tumah and Shur Yachid. This is a special rule. What happens? All suffix Tumah and Shur Yachid? It is Tumah, even if I've got a Sveika. So surely there, I've got a lot of arguments why it should be Tahar, but there's some special rule. Any doubtful Tumas and Rashid Yachid, we say Tameh. But what does he assume? I guess, I don't know if it's explicit. Oh, it sounds like it's an explicit Gemara. What if I had a rove in Rashid Yachid in the Tumas of Tahar case? I would say Tahar. So, at the very least, what do you see? Rove and Sveika don't play by the same rule book. Now, again, I think Simon's right. The easiest way to explain Sveika is it's a probability statistical probability. But what if I had some other conception why Sphinx-Sphinx is critically diseased? Not because of Rove. So then all possibilities are open, right? Sphinx-Sphinx could have a different rule book than Rove, and it could even cut in both directions. I could say Sphinx-Sphinx is a stronger argument than Rove. I could say Sphinx-Sphinx is a weaker argument than Rove. Right? Once it's not Rove, we have to figure out what its own dynamic is. So now things got quite interesting. Like, how would I imbue Sphinx-Sphinx? Does it function like Rove? Does it not function like Rove? Now, I'm going to take comments in 1 second. I just want to show you guys how, I want to make one point. Sometimes, something that looks like has limited applicability can have tremendous applicability somewhere else. It's one of the reasons to become a learned person. So you might say, how did you learn it? If topic A interests me, all I have to do is study topic A. But what if some minor point in topic B ends up spilling over to topic A? So here's a great example. Okay, everyone go to source 9 for 1 second. I think all of us in this room, I think we're all nice people, we would like there to be fewer agudah in the world, right? There shouldn't be women who are trapped in a marriage. They should be allowed to be married. Now again, the contemporary aguna is not the aguna through most of Jewish history. Okay, and unfortunately, what's the contemporary aguna? Usually a recalcitrant husband. Okay, that was not true in the Middle Ages. What was the classic aguna? We don't know what happened. Right, then we have this, isn't such good communication in the world. Husband goes on a business trip on a boat. We don't hear from him for months. Right? That was the tricky case, right? That was the classic aguna. It wasn't like some evil person. Where circumstances provides a difficult scenario. We're not sure what happens. So think about it. What might happen in such scenarios? We might try to figure out, can you rely on probability? Can you rely on Sphinx-Sphinx? Like, what kind of arguments can be marshaled to free the woman? Right, so notice what happens here in the Pnei Yeshua in the second source, second last paragraph. Ubiderech zeh shebal pri chadash matzanu shehochu kol gdolei chikrelei v'anshei chayol. Migdolei asfarim. See, guys, the asfarim come through once again. Hachronim b'tshivoteim. Dematirin b'sveik-sveika afilu b'cheskat isra eshenish. Ben b'nyinei aguna b'cheshesh b'simanim, etc., etc. What emerges, he says? Now again, I'm not going to draw all the lines, but he says, we're willing to use a Sphinx-Sphinx to be matir and aguna. So notice what just happened here in terms of how different halakhic areas could spill over to each other. We're discussing something that seems incredibly limited. I mean, fascinating, but limited. What are we discussing? If you're trapped in a desert and don't know where Shabbos is, should you make a bracha? And what question did we raise? What's the relationship between Sphinx-Sphinx and Rove? So that sounds, that's really a limited conversation. But notice how it spilled over to one of the most important issues ever. Wait, what's the relationship between Sphinx-Sphinx and Rove? Well, what if we're using those kind of arguments to be matir and aguna? Right? And all of a sudden, that's a really important question. Right? What is the status of Rove? What's the status of Sphinx-Sphinx? So again, I just put that in for a good methodology to realize why it's important when someone's going to make a halakhic ruling, knowing about some other category could definitely spill over. And even learning, by the way. Right, when you guys are learning, you're wondering why is this relevant? But no, but maybe this category will end up being much more relevant elsewhere. Yeah, Simon.
Do you need another rationale to separate Rove from Sphinx-Sphinx? For example, if you know that Rove wouldn't work for Aguna and you want to use Sphinx-Sphinx, do you need another box to plug in, or do you just separate it?
Look, I would say this. The best thing would be if we had another svara for Sphinx-Sphinx. But what if I just simply discovered that when I do a comparison halakha, the rules of Rove don't play out the rules of Sphinx-Sphinx? So Simon, I think at that point, I already... halfway there, because I can't just assume that Sphinx-Sphinx will follow the Rove criteria. Right? Notice his suffix tum example, right? It doesn't play out the same way. Okay, yeah, Zach.
Is Rove just like 51%, or is it threshold for
Rove? Okay, that's also a good question. Does that impact on whether Rove and Sphinx-Sphinx go together?
Sphinx-Sphinx is 75-25, and Rove could potentially be like, let's say, 60-40.
Okay, that's very clever, Zach, except for one thing. You're assuming that in the Sphinx-Sphinx scenario, both Sphinx-Sphinx are 50-50. And then you're right, then it plays out 75-25. But I'm not sure if that's a fair assumption to begin with. Okay, Aaron.
Can you explain, going back to the question before that, what's the functionality of the Shabbat, especially now that we've said, the reason why we're allowed to take the Russian because that's clearly not the case for Shabbat.
So again, I think you're doing a Shabbos. It's almost like there's you'll be happy if I say it this way. Something that's a formal takana, you should say a Kiddush, because we want you to know that there's such a thing called Shabbos. You're right. Aaron, get this down. We'll be on the final. What justifies the bracha in Kiddush is not what justifies the bracha on Tefillah. Right? You in Minnesota? No, not arbitrary at all. All right, guys, can we do a quick review? 2-minute review? Okay, here we go. Your Shabbat is on, you don't know what day is Shabbos. According to the Gemara's Pesach, how much malacha do you do? Enough to survive. What about on the day you think it's Shabbos? Same thing. Great. So what makes it Shabbos? Okay, according to Rashi, why did we do Kiddush and Abdullah every seventh day? Just so you remember that it's Shabbos. Okay, terrific. What about Tchum? What did Tosfot think? So first shot in Tosfot was 6 out of 7 days you walk out of Tchum. What was Tosfot thinking? What's the argument? Long term, Pikuach Nefesh. What was Tosfot's second approach though? All 7 days you walk out of Tchum. Okay? Why did the Ramban have a different argument for being lenient about Tchum? What was the Ramban's argument? It's not a malacha. Even if it's just a deraita, it's not a schamur. It's not an isur skila. So it's kind of interesting to realize there might be isurei Shabbat that don't take on all the severity of isur malacha. Great. Let's move on to tefillin. Why the or the biyalachas? Two arguments why you should wear tefillin every day. Argument one, you got a rov. 6 out of 7 is very good odds. Argument two, the only reason you're exempt from tefillin is because Shabbos is an oat. Someone in this unusual circumstance who's doing malacha, it turns out that for that person, Shabbat's not a note. Quite a fascinating spot. Okay, let's move now from wearing tefillin to make a bracha on tefillin. So the correspondent of the Dovah of Meisharim said, no bracha on tefillin because bracha batala. You don't say tefillin without the bracha. Well, that is the tricky part, guys. What was the Dovah of Meisharim's argument? And what was the comparison to Sfirat Omer? He says, what do I see in Sfirat Omer? What can justify bracha? Sveik is justified bracha. Now you have to make the little Simon Kaufman maneuver, which is sveik equals rove. So sveik justifies bracha. Rove. Here, that's the answer to your question now. Why do I make Mekadesh Shabbat? Because I don't want to forget that about the institution called Shabbos. Why do I make a bracha on the tefillin if the Tefillin Mishram is right? Because I've got a rove. Just like sveik justifies a bracha, rove justifies a bracha. You guys with me? You look unhappy.
I agree with what you're saying. I just feel like, where are they getting the confidence
about bracha? Okay, well, I say, guys, when Aaron Priven's a rabbi, he's going to be very machmir about bracha matala. We can tell already. The pattern's already formed here. Okay, it's okay, Aaron. That could be your shita. They are.
All you're saying to Zach is from that within each individual stuff, the odds may not be 50-50. But then what if the case was that the odds were like, really high that it was
better. Okay, that's a great question. But by the way, if Ari's right, though, it might actually prove that Sveik is not based on Rove. Like, what if you could have a scenario where even if you have a Sveik, you only have a 49% chance of being right? That's a great point.
Maybe it's not about statistical probability in the sense of, like, the total
extent
about each case.
Ah, very good. You think it's Rove theoretical possibility, it's not Rove. It'll be like, you know, how to lie with statistics, as it were. You go with the mean, the median, or the mode. Yeah. Okay, last thing, guys. So we have this all assuming. What was the biyalacha? Sorry, the Dovah Misharim assuming that a rove is a sveik-sveiker. A sveik-sveiker is a rove, I should say. But we should all leave the possibility. The Gemara never says that anywhere. What if we discover sveik-sveiker and rove have different rule books? Then you'd have to say there's some other argument going on in sveik-sveiker. And then the last point I wanted to make, guys, is it seems like a very limited question here, but once you have that point, it covers 5,000 things. Right? Let's see what it would be Makar and Aguna. How does rove play out? How does sveik-sveiker play out? So I think we see again that this more minor question ends up with Shas-wide implications. All right, everybody, I should have a great Shabbos. David, press again, the shot? Yeah.